Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston. Follow me on Blue Sky since I'm doing the majority of my weekly commentary there. And also, don't forget to subscribe to the show on YouTube. You see, I'm starting to post some content there that I'm not posting on the podcast. So please check it out by just searching for Left of Lansing. In fact, I gave a quick reaction to the news of Michigan Democratic U.S. Senator Gary Peters' announcement that he will not run for re-election in 2026, and I explained in 60 seconds why I thought that's a good thing for Democrats in Michigan and the country. I'll talk more about that here in a bit. But please, subscribe to the show on YouTube and subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you for the good numbers last week, as many of you really wanted to hear from a strong progressive voice like that of Democratic State Representative Betsy Cafia. She's the kind of no-nonsense, common-sense, progressive, working-class voice that we really need inside the Michigan Democratic Party and that we need in Lansing. Even more, she's not willing to give in and fall in line as autocracy is taking over our federal government. But worse, autocracy is celebrated inside the MAGA Michigan Republican Party that's now in control of the state house. Representative Cafia is giving Democrats the blueprint on how to stand up and take the battle to them as we work to protect the working class in the state. Sadly, though, not all Democrats in the state house learned that lesson after the election. No, a few of them thought the lesson they learned was to work with the party that celebrated the violent January 6th insurrection, that also tried to send fake Republican electors to steal the election in 2020, that works to strip away union rights, to strip away women's health care and abortion rights, strip away LGBTQ plus rights, strip away environmental justice rights, strip away racial justice rights, and that also works to defund the public schools and erase basic economic fairness for everyone out there so that they, the Republicans, can redistribute wealth back up to the corporate donor class. That's what the end game is always, always about. When they say that they don't like government, no, they do like government as long as it's working to enrich them. It's sad, though, as I said in my Monday musing this week, nine Democrats joined MAGA Republicans in the state house to weaken the working class by either voting to slow down a scheduled and much needed minimum wage increase and also to slow down extra earned paid sick leave that takes effect here in a few weeks. Republicans some 7 years ago already weakened those efforts. And then, you know, the Michigan Supreme Court had to rule that they acted unconstitutionally when they did such a thing. And now, after the state Supreme Court, the same court that many progressives fought to turn blue over the last 6 years, ruled that workers will receive wages and paid sick time leave that they were blocked from receiving, nine Democrats voted to either slow down the minimum wage raises or weaken the paid sick leave law. Nine. I feel like Ed Rooney and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Nine times. But yes, nine Democrats voted along with MAGA Republicans in the state house to weaken the state's new minimum wage raises and paid sick leave laws, all because they feared the corporate restaurant lobby, a lobby which will always say higher wages and more rights for workers will destroy them. They will always, always say that. It's horrible for the economy, they say, whenever workers gain a little more income or are treated a little more humanely. That's what they always say. It's what they always claim. But you never hear the same outrage when it comes to bills that benefit corporations and the rich, right? I mean, one of dear leader Trump's first moves will be to lower the corporate tax rate down to 15%. 15%! At a time where corporations cashed in big time during the last year thanks to greedflation and price gouging, the lesson that we all learned here was corporations need their taxes slashed even more? How is that a working class message by the Republican Party? Now, is the restaurant lobby in Michigan up in arms about that one? No. You see, that'll help them earn more profit. while keeping working wages low and at the same time making those selfish workers come into work even though they are sick. So that means they can infect others and also your food. Oh, good times indeed, everyone. Those Democrats, though, which I named individually in my Monday musing, must be pressed by all of you on a daily basis as to why they join MAGA Republicans in hurting the working class in the state. You know what? I'll do it again. I will share their names on here again in case you missed it on Monday. Their names are Carol Glanville of Walker, Peter Herzberg of Westland, Tulio Liberati of Allen Park, Will Snyder of Muskegon, Karen Whitsett of Detroit, of course, Angela Whitwer, of course, Noah Arbit of West Bloomfield, Tyrone Carter of Detroit, and Amos O'Neill of Saginaw. Hey, and we wonder why so many people stayed home in the last election, especially in the city of Detroit. Speaking of Democrats capitulating for no good reason and leaving those that were supposed to be helping out in the cold to fend for themselves, Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Kristen McDonald-Rivett is already having to defend a pro-MAGA Republican bill that she voted in favor of in just her first month of office. McDonald-Rivett of Bay City was one of some 40-plus Democrats who voted along with the right-wing MAGA Republicans in Congress to pass the Lake and Riley Act, which Dear Leader Trump proudly signed into law earlier this week. Now, this law allows authorities to detain any migrant in the country who's been charged with nonviolent crimes like theft. But you see, it rips away any kind of due process for migrants in the country as they could face deportation even if they haven't been convicted of that crime. I mean, I thought Democrats believed in due process. I thought we were the rule of law party. And even more, I thought Democrats were against the constant demonization of the immigrant community. Congresswoman McDonald-Rivett says that she's all about helping the working class and helping lower costs for the working class, but by singling out the migrant community, many of whom already work here, which benefits the working class in terms of costs, not to mention they also help in terms of tax revenue, McDonald-Rivett is actually hurting the working class. Michigan Advance quoted her saying that her agenda is common sense, no nonsense, working people first. Wait, how's that helping the working class? How is that common sense? And if they go for the immigrant community, now what's to say that they won't try to strip away due process for others that they deem dangerous? What's your answer for that, Congresswoman McDonald-Rivett? And what's your answer, Democratic Senators Alyssa Slotkin and Gary Peters? They also back this bill. So working together with those guys on attacking marginalized people is what you guys call common sense? Huh? Oh, I almost forgot. Dear Leader says that he's reopening Guantanamo Bay to imprison some of our immigrant neighbors. I mean, Gitmo has always had such a positive glow on it ever since the cool torture stuff that we did there during the George W. Bush years. So that means, Christina McDonald-Rivett, Senator Slotkin, Senator Peters, you must be so giddy and excited and pleased to work with a regime that's bent on following in the footsteps of George W. Bush and refusing to follow the law. Bravo! The sad part about all this is that all you've done is embolden Dear Leader and his cult to go further and further in getting rid of the people they deem to be the others. And in the end, they will sell all you guys out in a heartbeat. And we wonder why so many voters decided to stay home last election. Which leads me to Senator Peters. Another Michigan Advance headline said the following: in a blow to Democrats' chances to retake the Senate, Senator Gary Peters declines to seek re-election in 2024. This story was written by Kyle Davidson, and it's a good write-up on Peters' decision to no longer run. However, I disagree with the whole premise of the headline because I view this as a beautiful opportunity for Democrats to really win that seat in 26. Look, Senator Peters seems like a decent guy and all, but he was, quite honestly, a milquetoast senator. We're in some dire times with an autocrat who wants to run like a dictator and who's aided and abetted by a Republican Party that's willing to follow his every command. We need fighters and we need strength. Senator Peters, though, is not right for this time. He's not. Maybe he would have been better in the 90s, but he's not right for this time. He's not a wartime conciliary, and the people are begging for a strong opposition party right now. Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who's kind of been milquetoast herself of late, even admitted on MSNBC recently that there's no true leader in the Democratic Party. I mean, she could be, but she announced that she'd rather find common ground with the same guy she said was once a threat to this nation's future. But overall, The governor is correct in how the Democrats really don't have a true leader right now because Democrats have been getting steamrolled and have been ineffective ever since Election Day. For instance, the Michigan Democratic Party's leadership showed its ass when it failed to pass several pieces of progressive legislation during the lame duck session last year. That was a complete and utter disaster, and it drove down any kind of confidence maybe some voters had for Democrats. Democrats need true fighters, like Representative Betsy Cafia. And that's why Gary Peters wasn't going to bring or add some kind of electrifying excitement to the Michigan Democratic Party ticket in 26. He severely underperformed when he nearly lost to that clown MAGA Republican Congressman John James back in 2020, and it wasn't going to get much better for him this time. Peters nearly lost because the people didn't know exactly who he fought for and what he believed in. That's a problem. We're going to have one of the more consequential elections coming up in the state of Michigan in 26 with the gubernatorial, attorney general, secretary of state, U.S. Senate seats all up for grabs. Oh, and by the way, the entire state legislature will be up for grabs as well. You can't have boring, technocratic, afraid of their own shadow kinds of Democrats running next year. Just can't do it. Perhaps next year we can have a younger, vibrant, smart, articulate, progressive working class candidate to run against a corporate-backed Christian nationalist MAGA Republican this time. Maybe that would give voters a stark contrast and they would realize who the working class party really is and which one works for the corporations. While I thank Senator Peters for his service, it is time for him to move on, and I'm glad he is. Okay, coming up in a moment, environmental activist Peter Sinclair will join the show because in order to defeat MAGA at the polls here in the future, we have to find ways to defeat their propaganda machine. As you've heard me lament repeatedly here, progressives are losing the messaging wars because we aren't the best at countering the MAGA lies for a number of reasons. You remember me talking recently about how around the holidays, the Michigan MAGA misinformation machine was in full overdrive, overrising egg prices and blaming Democrats for the high prices in eggs because of a new law requiring egg-laying hens to be cage-free at the start of the year. And it went viral, and MAGA Republicans and their cult were screaming at the top of their lungs about how this was just yet another Democratic bill filled with government overreach. Except the cage-free law was a Republican bill passed years ago, and the deadline was set years ahead to ensure that big farms could prepare for that deadline. Also, the misinformers refused to acknowledge that the bird flu played the biggest role in egg prices rising nationwide, not just in Michigan, nationwide. But you see, by the time the people learned about the true facts, the lies had already spread and the damage was done. Something similar happened around the Gaylord area when there was a mega meltdown over solar panels. The mega misinformation machine turned out another lie of a story, claiming a clean energy company was going to wipe out trees and destroy pristine forest land in northern Michigan for a solar panel farm. I mean, this had the far right claiming that they were the actual protectors of the environment, yelling that progressives and environmentalists were the ones actually destroying the land, all thanks to the Michigan Department of Natural Resources for granting all that public land, and that they were going to destroy all these trees, and they were going to destroy rivers and streams and blah. And everything, except it was all a lie. The clean energy company decided years ago to scrap that original plan and instead picked private lands to build a solar farm. And the land that was originally selected by the DNR had already been used up by the fossil fuel industry. But you see, it was all designed. This whole misinformation campaign around the story was all designed to cause confusion and divide the people. And in some ways, it may have worked. Peter Sinclair is joining me to talk more about this story and give the true facts behind it and why the fossil fuel lobby led lie after lie after lie. And we'll also talk about the future of clean energy in the United States with dear leader Trump now back in power. You're listening to LOL.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
You Yeah, with everything that I've already mentioned in my opening dealing with Trump and his MAGA Republican lackeys who will go along with his dictatorial takeover of our federal government, we also have to pay attention to the horrific repercussions in store for us when it comes to climate change. I mean, the Trump regime utilizes, as we know, disinformation and outright lies that are backed by the powerful fossil fuel industry to discredit, defund, and decelerate any policies and goals to reverse climate change. And it might get to the point that after these next 4 years, it may be all irreversible, if not already. Joining me to talk about this dangerous partnership of MAGA Republicans along with the fossil fuel industry and how they rely on major disinformation propaganda to attack the science of climate change while enriching big oil and gas is the one and only Peter Sinclair. Mr. Sinclair is an environmental activist, climate change educator, a science journalist, and videographer from Midland. And I thought this would be a perfect time to bring him back here on the show to talk about climate change, especially with an important story that happened here in Michigan recently. Peter, thanks so much for coming back on. I appreciate it.
Oh my God, where do we even start?
That's a good question. Where do we start? But I do want to start here. As I stated near the conclusion of my opening here this week, I originally wanted to have you on to talk about this disinformation campaign that happened here in Michigan concerning a solar panel farm in the northern Lower Peninsula. A story went viral recently in which Michigan's Department of Natural Resources gave the green light to lease some 400 plus acres of state-managed land around the Gaylord area for a proposed solar farm. Now, this whole thing went viral because opponents of such a plan developed a fast and wide-ranging disinformation campaign against this plan, saying that the solar farm would destroy pristine forest land, all to appease those crazy leftist elitists who want to destroy the environment. I mean, that was their argument. Strange, but let's continue to hear their angle. Because one Michigan MAGA Republican state representative named Ken Borton of Gaylord criticized the plan, saying that this showed how the DNR was rotten to its core and that this deforestation will destroy habitats and effectively kill wildlife. Let me make this clear. The DNR is choosing to kill wildlife so that they can build solar panels. But here's the thing, and as you wrote, Peter, in your blog, the company that will build this solar farm, RWE Clean Energy, had already announced a few years ago that it was not going to build on state lands. So if it's not building on state lands and it's already going to be building on private property, what's the whole problem here? Why did this get all viral? And why did this get so many people in an uproar? Peter, can you give us a little bit more background and fill in the blanks on some of the things I may have missed about this solar farm story and talk about this whole disinformation campaign that went into motion and went viral thanks to the anti-clean energy forces out there?
Yeah, fascinating example of the global disinformation that we're being subjected to by the fossil fuel industry. First of all, as you mentioned, and this is really important, the whole premise for this story was false. There is a solar developer that is working on a solar farm entirely on private land, not far away in that same township. And the DNR developed the idea to use some marginal land and offered to the developer to include it as part of their project. The developer turned that down, I think, most of a year ago. And so this whole idea that there was some kind of imminent use of state land was completely false right from the get-go. But let's just review some of the basic numbers here. The DNR administers 4.6 million acres of land in Michigan. To date, they have evaluated about 30,000 of those acres for possible use with solar energy. Of those, 1,500 acres have been leased for solar development in other locations. We expect at maximum, most optimistic projection would be that 4,000 acres of land, marginal land, might be leased for solar, which is far fewer than the acres of land used for oil and gas wells right in the state, and less than 1,000th of the DNR's total holdings. The idea the DNR had was if they could interest the developer, which they could not, but if they had, they would have developed some revenue which would have allowed them to purchase an equivalent amount of better quality land elsewhere in the state that would be more appropriate for recreation, hunting, fishing, whatever you may have. This particular plot of land that we're talking about is actually, it's broken up into several plots. It's in Hayes Township, west of Gaylord, 52 acres, 20% of the land is already cleared of trees because it includes power lines. There are three large transmission power lines transecting this land. There are no fewer than 14 oil and gas wells on this land. And a large section of the land was scoured to the ground by the highly unusual, and I would argue climate change enhanced tornado that hit Gaylord back in May of 2022. Another 127 acres of the land was previously harvested for logging not too long ago. Another 80 acres of it is row planted with red pines that are soon to be clear cut. A 33-acre section of the land is directly across from the county airport where planes are taking off and landing. So 76% of the land is either clear, previously cleared, subject to future clearing, or is on a flight path, regardless of whether solar energy is ever built there. Nevertheless, we had this massive global disinformation campaign swing into action, starting with our very own Mackinac Center, located up here in Midland near me, where the dour representative of the Mackinac Center intoned somberly how terrible it was that evil environmentalists wanted to cut down trees while standing in front of like a backdrop that looked like a pristine forest, complete with a babbling brook that was absolutely completely non-representative of the actual scrubland that we're talking about here, you know?
Yeah.
Someone sent me a Facebook post. Someone had posted on a Michigan Facebook site an article about this story, complete with a sort of a sarcastic, clickbaity headline from a website registered in Pakistan. And included with that story was a picture of a forest that looked for all the world like the Costa Rican rainforest or something.
Why? What did it have in it? What was in the
image? Well, it was like palm trees and, giant vines and, you know, nothing that any resident of Michigan will recognize as a typical local forest. And so, you know, it's an absolute fabrication top to bottom, but aimed in part at people who are progressives or people that have environmental sympathies, because certainly none of us would like to see old growth or, you know, important habitat, forest land cleared for solar energy. That's not the point. That's not what we're about here. The other point that is sometimes brought up was that we use forest land to sequester carbon. Some people would ask, why would you put solar panels on land that could otherwise sequester carbon? The answer in this case, for this proposed 420 acres, and the DNR went through and did the numbers on this, is that you end up displacing 100 times more carbon by putting solar panels on that land than you would just maintaining it as a tree farm. So at every stage, this is false, bogus, made up, overblown, add as many adjectives as you like, but it's just further evidence of the very energetic, well-funded, well-coordinated, and global misinformation campaign that clean energy has to contend with if we're going to turn this climate crisis around.
All right, so then just to be clear, this clean energy company, it already decided to build the solar farm on private property and property that you said is would be perfect for a solar farm, as you just described. So was the whole purpose then of this campaign to divide the progressive or the environmental movement?
Well, I think somebody in that fossil fuel establishment recognized that this is the kind of story they're looking for to do exactly that, is sort of confuse people. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt, FUD is the acronym. The fossil fuel industry doesn't care about getting truth or fact out to the public. What they always are looking for is to create confusion. For the fossil fuel industry, confusion is a win. And the more they can create confusion or create within people the idea that truth is impossible to know or unknowable, so that they may just throw up their hands and walk away. So this was a story that, however it originated, this is a story that was tailor-made for that fossil fuel goal.
Right. And again, I can see how this confused so many people because, you know, I've read a few stories on this, including what you wrote in your blog, of course. I have also heard this covered, I think, with Michigan Public Radio even had a story on this whole so-called controversy. But there really wasn't a controversy because, again, I just want to make sure that this is stressed. This company decided to put this solar farm on private lands, not on public lands. So there is no story.
Yeah, they're building on private land. We're seeing all over the state there are farmers who are interested in diversifying their income by having clean energy on their lands. I'm a big believer that maintaining our farmers as stewards of the land is a great idea. And one way to do that is allow them the ability to create flood-proof, drought-proof, recession-proof income that's guaranteed for 25, 30 years into the future so that they can make plans and pass their land on to their next generation. I think that's something that should be a goal for all of us.
You know, Michigan Advance had a detailed story on this so-called controversy, and that MAGA Republican that I mentioned already, Ken Borton, he said in a statement, and I'm just going to quote here what he said in the statement. He said, "We demand answers as to where flattening over 400 acres of forest to clear the way for foreign-built solar panels fits within your department's mission. We also demand a thorough report on all DNR department's mission, and we also demand a thorough report on all DNR involvement with efforts to replace valuable natural resources with unproven energy technologies." Now, that statement was signed by 51 other Republicans, plus Karen Whitsitt, who's left the Democrats many, many times to join Republicans and their disinformation team a few times already here. But you make an interesting point. You've already kind of touched on it, and I wouldn't mind if you would talk a little bit more in detail about it. But you did make this interesting point on your blog on how these same people don't seem to really harbor the same kind of anger and concerns about our pristine forest lands here in Michigan when it comes to clearing trees for oil and gas and just for fossil fuels, right?
Well, yeah. This is a podcast. I can't show you the picture, but if you go to my blog, think.blog, you can probably search out the article that I did on this, and you'll find a picture from the DNR showing how much land in northern Michigan is leased for oil and gas wells. And it is substantial. You'll be amazed. There's, of course, no outrage from Representative Borton or anybody else in the legislature about that long-term tradition, which has resulted in a significant number of wells that have been abandoned that will be have to be cleaned up at taxpayer expense unless we want to deal with continued emissions of toxic gases and God knows what else. It's complete hypocrisy on their part. We should also point out that the DNR leases something like 50,000 acres of land that is clear cut every year as part of forestry, private forestry operations. You know, that's a legitimate industry, and well-managed forestry can actually be a good thing, I presume. But again, they're not concerned about that at all. It is specifically that someone saw the opportunity here to serve the interests of the fossil fuel industry, and they took it.
You know, in that same Michigan Advance story, written, by the way, by a good friend of this podcast, John King, when asked if whether the examination of the DNR's leasing practices would solely focus on renewable energy production or also examine more traditional sources such as oil and gas, Representative Borton did not send a response to John's question, which to me, Peter, that silence on that issue just speaks volumes to me. I don't know.
Of course.
You know, another important piece that you brought up in your piece on your blog, and I believe it's also available on the Midland Daily News as well, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yes, that's what I thought. Another point that you brought up is how solar farms not only create energy, but they also help revive the soil and groundwater where they reside. Can you tell us how that happens?
Yeah, it's sort of common sense that if you stop pounding soil with pesticides and heavy machinery and, you know, toxic poisons and fertilizer, that they will over time recover. And the idea of leaving land time to recover is that's written up in the Bible in Leviticus. That's an old, old concept that farmers understand. We understand that soil that is under solar panels and planted with native plants and pollinators, which is pretty much the standard nowadays, will over time result in much richer soil because those native plants tend to have much deeper, lush root systems than crop plants. So you're going to draw moisture and nutrients down deep into the soil and lock them in over time. And you're also going to create habitat for a wide variety of all kinds of creatures at the bottom of the food chain that we would like to support. For instance, we have this fantastic study that was done at Argonne National Lab, and they looked at two solar farms on agricultural land over 4 years. And what they observed after the end of that four-year study was that there was an increase in native plant species diversity and flower abundance. I'm reading their conclusions now. Abundance and diversity of native insect pollinators and beneficial insects, including honeybees, native bees, wasps, hornets, hoverflies. Flowering plant species increased. Total insect abundance tripled, while native bees showed a 20-fold increase in numbers. Add that to small mammals, ground nesting birds, whole range of critters that find habitat on these kind of lands, and you're talking about reviving the bottom end of the food chain, which is a critical, critical piece if we're going to recover from our extinction crisis, which is the twin of the climate crisis. And it's happening in large part because we have developed so much land that we've knocked out habitat for a whole range of creatures that are critical to sustain.
And you see, that is the frustrating part about all of this, is that you've got one side backed by the oil and gas lobby, all right? A lobby that is doing everything in its power to delay the clean energy movement. You've got forces there saying, no, no, it is the progressive movement. It is the environmentalist movement out there. They're the ones who are actually hurting the environment, while we know for a fact that solar panels actually help revive the environment. I mean, it's very, very Orwellian 1984 wording that they use many times. And it's so maddening at times that some people actually buy into it.
And let me just put one other myth to rest. Is there is a persistent notion that solar panels have some kind of a toxic effect on water or soil. And having talked to our leading solar experts at Michigan State, University of Michigan, Michigan Tech, there are no examples. There has never been an instance of soil or water being contaminated by a utility scale solar farm. It just doesn't happen. And if you understand how these panels are constructed and put up, you would understand it's difficult to see how such a thing could even possibly happen. So that's another myth.
Yeah. So knowing how the story blew way out of proportion due to all of this disinformation that was spread by the oil and gas lobby and by right-wing think tanks, which parroted all of these lines by the oil and gas lobby, and of course, don't forget state Republicans who joined in the whole issue as well, what can we do, you know, going forward to stop or at least to combat this kind of propaganda that's coming from that side? Because we'll continue to see it more and more, Peter. We'll continue to see more and more disinformation campaigns like this in the future, kind of like we're seeing in the fight to close down the Line 5 Canadian oil pipeline under the Straits of Mackinac right now.
Read my blog.
I'd agree with you on that one. Yes, absolutely.
Think that blog, THINC blog, is a good idea. I'm trying very hard to develop reliable, credible resources from actual experts, such as experts at our universities, but also, you know, working farmers and dedicated public servants, local officials and the like, who know the real story on clean energy that they've seen in real life. And I have been putting a lot of those resources at two websites, sun101.org. and wind101.info. So I would commend those to people to get more informed on this. With the new administration in power, we're going to be subjected to a constant stream of fossil fuel disinformation. I view the current administration as basically the tip of the spear for the global fossil fuel establishment, which recognizes they're on the verge of losing their power and control.
Right.
They have simply decided that autocracy is the answer. And the way to go forward for them is to just close down democracy and bring about some kind of an outlaw international order, where only the powerful can have a voice.
Well, you know, while I still have you here just for a couple more moments, and since you brought them up, I did want to ask you about the recent announcement by Trump's new transportation secretary, TV guy Sean Duffy, in which he said that he wants to roll back fuel efficiency standards that were set by the Biden administration, and these new standards required passenger cars to average 65 miles per gallon by 2031. It's currently around 48. And then it also required pickup trucks and SUVs to average around 45 miles per gallon by that same year. So according to the New York Times, Mr. Duffy, it says, expressed doubts about whether the current fuel economy standards accurately reflect the United States' abundant oil reserves and refining capabilities. So how does gutting new fuel efficiency standards help the average Michigander and American who will now have to visit gas stations more and more, and thereby artificially, I guess, keeping the price of gas high? Wouldn't cars that don't guzzle, I would think, as much gas not only help the oil supply, but also be cleaner for the environment and our public health? And maybe even for our American car industry, I would think this would help them too in the long run.
Well, the world is moving to electric vehicles. The largest car market in the world is China. And the majority of vehicles now being sold in China are EVs. And our auto companies, General Motors, for instance, used to sell more cars in China, famously, than they did in the United States. That is no longer true. U.S. cars used to be considered kind of chic and trendy in China. Now they're starting to be considered dinosaurs because it's the EVs that have taken over the cool factor. These initiatives to slow down our transition to EVs are incredibly dangerous for the Michigan economy and for the auto industry that I would like to see succeed. Because this is really the heart of our manufacturing, and it's, I believe, critical to our national security and our economy going forward. But any idea that somehow we're all going to wake up one day and decide to go back to inefficient, polluting internal combustion engines that keep us dependent upon greedy global oil businesses is just a fantasy.
Unfortunately, though, it seems like we're stuck there.
Well, we're not. Actually, we're not.
Okay.
This transition is going to take place. The current administration can try to slow it down. They might slow it down a little bit. But what is inevitably going to happen is our manufacturers have invested incredible amounts of money in the EV transition. And within about 18 months or 2 years tops, we're going to see a new generation of American and international EVs that are incredibly capable and very affordable, competitively affordable, in fact, cheaper than internal combustion vehicles. That transition is unstoppable. My experience, a lifelong observer of the energy industry, is that governments can have some kind of effect, but ultimately markets rule. The fact is, once people try electric vehicles, they don't want to go back. That's certainly true in the largest auto markets all around the planet, the ones that are critical for us to remain competitive in if we want our industry to thrive. So it's tragic if we have a federal government that wants to deliberately sabotage our own industries. And obviously, they view their mission as more for loyalty to the fossil fuel industry than to our own domestic manufacturing. I don't know why that is, but it seems clear to me.
Well, listen, we have so much more I could have talked with you about, but we are out of time. So I just want to thank you, Peter, for being on. Peter Sinclair, environmental activist, climate change educator, science journalist, videographer from Midland. Don't forget to visit his blog called think.blog. Is that right?
Yes, think.blog, THINC. This is not cool is the title of the blog.
Plus, Peter, you're also on YouTube as well, correct?
Yeah, just search under Peter Sinclair Climate on YouTube. You won't be too long before you see a bunch of videos. I have many hundreds that are out there.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much for your time and for highlighting how the oil and gas lobby is working double overtime to get certain politicians to spread lies and disinformation about the clean energy efforts here in the state and across the country. Please come back again soon, and thank you so much for all your hard work.
You bet, and you too, Pat. Let's talk again soon.
He enjoys watching sporting events from years ago. He can recite most of the 1984 Detroit Tigers lineup. He will go to the mat in saying Michigan has produced some of the greatest music in the past 60 years. But most of all, he enjoys the loyalty of a fine dog while sipping on a tasty Michigan beer. Oh, and he loves talking about politics, if you haven't been able to tell yet. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need more Pat? Visit and subscribe to leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat.
I'd like to thank Peter Sinclair for being on the show this week, and I will link to his blog, which is think.blog. That's THINC.blog. And I'll link to his YouTube page wherever you are listening to this podcast. I just wanted to add a couple of quick notes to our discussion. One, as we were talking about how the Trump regime is trying to slow down the production of EV cars, Peter said that the transitioning to EV cars is happening worldwide, and that's completely true. The big three Detroit automakers know that's where the future of the industry is going and the marketplace is going. And hell, as we've covered here extensively, Michigan taxpayers have shelled out plenty of cash to the big three in corporate welfare money to help in that EV transition. However, as we've noted here as well, the money isn't being spent in the greatest ways by the automakers. And maybe if we had a little bit more time, I could have asked Peter if more investments should be made in public transportation or public transit. Maybe it's time that we aren't so car and so auto manufacturing dependent here in the state. I mean, that's one thought. Maybe that's something I'll talk about with Peter next time he's on. And another part that I wanted to repeat from Peter is where he said, confusion is a win. I wrote that down as we were talking, as he described why the fossil fuel industry, along with right-wing think tanks like the Mackinac Center, and of course, Michigan Republicans, continue these disinformation tactics like they did here with the solar farm. I mean, even though the clean energy company decided years ago to forgo building a solar farm on public lands in the state and instead build it on private lands, land that isn't filled with trees, the fossil fuel lobby got all of the MAGA right-wingers in an uproar over a lie that the state was destroying trees and good land for solar panels. It was a complete and utter lie, and Peter Sinclair said the reason for all the lying is that the anti-clean energy forces hope to confuse everyone out there just enough to scare politicians away from doing the right thing. And that is why we cannot back down from their scare tactics and their blatant lies. That's why we have to share this information with each other and let everyone understand the game that's happening right before our very eyes. It's a game, though, that we can win, but we need to promote people like Peter Sinclair and so many others out there who fight for a cleaner future and who fight for the environmental justice of those who don't have the money to bribe politicians. And it's just one of the reasons why I started this podcast in the first place, to share the truth and to fight the MAGA right-wing disinformation machine. But we cannot do it alone. So please support people like Peter Sinclair if you can, and support this podcast by subscribing, sharing episodes and clips, and following the show on YouTube as well. Okay, time now for the Left of Lansing last call. I just wanted to quickly point out that the fossil fuel industry decided that a little autocracy is okay for the time being because they will be paid back quite handsomely thanks to the Trump regime and the MAGA Republican Congress. Well, and also thanks to a handful of spineless Democrats. As I was wrapping up my talk with Mr. Sinclair, news broke that the U.S. Senate confirmed former New York Republican Congressman Lee Zeldin to become the next head of the Environmental Protection Agency. Zeldin is a longtime water boy for the fossil fuel industry, and he earned a comical 14% lifetime score from the League of Conservation Voters. 14%. Zeldin now will be in charge of rolling back those car emission standards that I mentioned, along with other Biden-era initiatives to cut pollution coming from power plants. And Zeldin's main role, of course, will be to help the regime's efforts in cutting back on EV car production. Now, Reuters reports that as a congressman, Zeldin voted against legislation on green energy issues and also voted against a measure to stop oil companies from price gouging. Huh. And as a candidate for New York governor in the 2022 election, Zeldin criticized the state's decision to join California's Zero Emissions Vehicle Program that vows to end the sale of gasoline-powered-only vehicles by 2035. So, Lee Zeldin, who's now the head of the EPA for the next 4 years, once voted against a bill to stop oil companies from price gouging. Hey, you remember how the MAGA Republican Party during the election claimed to be the party of the working class, right? I mean, we don't forget that, right? It was just a couple of months months ago, yet they once again proved how that was always a lie by putting in a lightweight like this guy who will do whatever his fossil fuel benefactors want him to do, and rolling back regulations on power plants, which endangers both the country's environmental and public health, isn't exactly what I would call a pro-worker agenda. But here's the gut punch to this whole story. Three Democratic senators voted to confirm Lee Zeldin as the EPA head. Those senators were Pennsylvania's John Fetterman, who's quickly becoming more and more MAGA by the day. I feel sorry for so many Pennsylvanians right now. And the other two Democratic senators were both Arizona senators, Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly. Yes, the same Mark Kelly many inside the Democratic Party wanted Kamala Harris to pick as her VP. Now, of course, even if these three voted against Zeldin, he still would have been confirmed by the Republican majority. But that doesn't mean Democrats have to give in to their fears, turn tail, and approve any of these guys for dear leader Trump, because it hurts the Democratic Party's branding. Well, whatever that may be right now. But the branding should be that the party is pro-worker, anti-corporate, pro-clean energy. Votes like this, though, add confusion to the base of the party. It hurts the base of the party. It's exactly like Peter Sinclair said. The fossil fuel industry's main goal is to cause confusion with the people, because confusion is a win. If you're wondering why so many voters stayed home last year, it's actions like this one by these three Democratic senators. And it's just a shame, because we can do better and we can fight better. But maybe that means we need better Democrats.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks to Peter Sinclair for being on this week. Next week, I'm looking forward to speaking with writer Michelle Adams on her new book titled The Containment, Detroit, the Supreme Court, and the Battle for Racial Justice in the North. See, going back and learning our history helps us better understand the present. Unlike MAGA Republicans, we don't want to erase our history or lie about it. We want to learn about it. Learn from our experiences, and then find ways to ensure that we never, ever repeat it. Unfortunately, we're witnessing that in some ways we are repeating it, as we just have a president of the United States blaming, without evidence, of course, that DEI is to blame for the horrific and tragic plane crash in Washington, D.C. Because in MAGA's mindset, only white people are qualified and above the law. Hence why, dear leader, pardon all of those insurrectionists who beat cops and broke the law. And they say they back the blue. I really wish that we had some Lions football to help us escape from all this, but unfortunately, we don't. But on the good news front, because of public outrage, Trump and his regime did rescind their freeze on government spending, since it was hurting millions and millions of Americans, including those who backed him. So I guess that's a small victory, but there's so much more to go. And that's what the Left of Lansing podcast is all about: spreading strong, common sense, progressive values to help defeat MAGA, white Christian nationalist republicanism, and autocracy. Until next time, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.